Matt, Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
You were not exactly Joe Cap there in the pocket.
Presented by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
503 says, I don't know, guys, I'm more of a St. John Smith guy. Yeah, that makes sense. Who's another one? You got Brent Frohoff, St. John Smith, Karch Karai, a couple others. That's all I can remember off the top of my head. Robbie in Seattle says everyone turns into Jesus Montero when they try to run on the beach. Oh, yeah, that's pretty accurate. Yes. 360 says, I really think you guys should rank Brock's fantasies one of these days. Obviously, beach volleyball and jorts is in there. Mm. Yep, we could work on that at some point, I think. We could. And then you can only wear jeans while playing beach volleyball. That's the rule, according to the 509. Yeah, that sounds about right. So, what?
No, thanks.
No?
No.
You don't even really wear jeans, though. You're not a jeans guy.
No, not really.
No.
Never been a huge... growing up, you know, the hand-me-downs and everything else, and the Levi's, the
You're
one pair
jeans
of Levi's.
Guy, though. No. You just don't... That's not your thing.
Nope.
Nope, never happens. All right.
Not really.
Well, he told us he likes the joggers because they keep him youthful.
Yep.
Who says
we were
that?
Talking about being middle-aged. She said, but I wear the joggers, so...
So he's not 48.
Yeah, he's big ABC joggers.
Yeah. I mean, if the distance between my knee and my ankle was the same as yours, then I'd probably be wearing joggers, too. It seems like a pretty good look when you've got really long legs like that. Yeah. But when, at 5'10", that's really not quite the same situation. And yes, it's 5'10", all you jerks out there. Maura, let's play some buy or sell.
All right. First up, we have Michael Penix is already off the board by the time the Seahawks pick at 16. Buy or sell?
Sold.
Sold in the back row.
So you sold to the lady in the second row.
You think he's going to be available?
Sold that he is. He'll be available. Yeah, there was only one of my six gurus that I've chatted with that had him go before 16.
Mm.
Now, there's one that had him taken at 16.
Okay.
I still can't figure out whether that was a trade. I think it was a trade. And I don't know if it was, whom it was, but I'm going to say he's going to be... There's a reason that the NFL told him and Bo Nix. They would have loved to have either of those guys. And I think if they were confident that he would go before the top 20, he would be in New York City. And I think Penix would have taken up that opportunity, or in Detroit City, taken that opportunity to be there for the draft. So
yeah, I'm going to buy it just for the sake of argument, Brock. I'm going to buy it. I don't know whether it's by 16. I think what I feel more is that he will be a first-round pick. I don't know if it necessarily comes before number 16 or not. But at the end of the day... There aren't that many people who can throw a football as well as Michael Penix does, and he's super athletic, and he's won. I don't know what the heck else these people want. He's been a leader. He's been a battler. He's overcome adversity, which is something most coaches say they want. He can throw the heck out of a football, and he's a winner. Like, what am I missing? Michael Penix should be a first-round pick, and ultimately, in Bert Breer saying that the coaches and scouts are kind of split on him, I think at least one coach will overrule his scouts and say, that guy could transform our program. Somebody will take him definitely in the first round, and I think even before 16.
All right, next up, I have some sound for you. My question is, buy or sell that the Red Sox announcers are haters?
And I think you're absolutely right on these home run celebrations. Come up with it sort of on the fly, as opposed to what some teams are doing, like, hey, hand the guy a trident that we had an engineer, 3,000 miles away, create in a lab somewhere, mail to you.
Yeah, and there's the medal. Yeah. It's going to go around a little bit, but I actually think when the year's up, you come up with something new. You don't need the laundry cart 2-3 years in a row. I mean, that was a couple years ago. Like, find something new.
Half the fun is something new.
Get Coors Metal.
Wow. Dave O'Brien.
Wow.
Haters. And Lou Maloney, who's been on the show a couple of times over the years.
Absolute haters.
I'm sorry.
All right, Brock's buying.
Buying it? Selling the heck out of that. They're
sold
absolutely
in the back
right.
Row.
Lou is absolutely right.
I like engineered in a lab
somewhere.
No,
that's Dave. That part's wrong. What I'm buying is the second part of it. Come up with something new every year. The trident was last year, and it was great when you came up with it last year. This is a new team. Why would you use last year's celebration?
Because then it gets real gimmicky. Did I see the Reds and Fraley put on a Viking
helmet? Yeah, they have some sort of a Viking helmet.
What?
But what they're doing now,
I mean,
now
the Trident is great. The Trident is great because it represents the Mariners. Like, it's tied to the Mariners.
Yeah, when they first thought of it, it was awesome. I loved it last year, 100% all in. Now it feels gimmicky. Polanco looked like he didn't even want it. They gave it to someone the other day. Who was it who hit, like, a meaningless ninth-inning home run when they were down six? They handed him the Trident, and he was like, yeah, all right, I have a Trident. I don't want this right now. It was a Canzone. He's just like, this is, we're getting killed. Please don't give me the Trident right now.
No,
I like it when it's new. I like it when it's original.
Remember where all this began. It all began with the turnover chain.
Which was great.
Which was awesome.
And then eventually you retire and you do something else.
It fit South Florida. That chain, that thing fit South Florida.
The Orioles now have like a full refreshment station in there because they started doing the beer bongs, right? Mm. And now they have a whole like, it's got tubes coming out of it and stuff.
Isn't it, if basic, aren't they like doing a sprinkler thing where they're like,
I'm here for all of that stuff.
I will take no Trident slander.
I just think that you should come up with something new each year.
I love the Trident.
Me too.
And there was the Swellment for a while. There's a few. They've gone through a few things.
Yeah, right. Swellment was great too. I like these things. Just that you have to come up with new ones every year. Otherwise, it feels fake. Mm. Feels forced.
I'm not on the other side of that. Yeah, you come up with something new every year, it becomes fake and contrived. And some
like,
of the
what's
most
it going to be this year? It's like you're forcing that.
But now it's it's too much for me. Sorry.
I didn't know this one would tear you guys apart.
Yep.
All right. Next up, Sebi's of. Buy or sell, Sebi Zavala will record a hit before the M's Sunday uniforms arrive. They're still waiting on those cream uniforms. Supposedly, they're coming the next homestand.
I'm going to still sell that. I don't think Sebi Zavala is going to be
sold
for that long.
In the back row.
I got to be honest. Buy or sell, Sebi Zavala is still on the team by the time the cream uniforms arrive.
Yikes.
I mean, he can't hit. They knew he couldn't hit. That's fine. But his fielding has been atrocious. Backup catchers are about as rare as air molecules. If you need a backup catcher, you can go find one. That's a line from Dave Barry I just stole. But you can find another backup catcher. They're everywhere. If you can't hit and you can't field, there are 30 other people that can take your job.
You better do
somebody
one
else
of
will
those.
Do that.
You better do one of those two things.
That's right.
So I'm going to sell that as well. He's not going to be here.
Lady in the second row. She's an 8. She's a 9. She's a 10. I know.
Yep, I know that for sure.
I got one from Brock then. I'm interrupting.
You're interrupting.
I have
a special buy sell.
Because we got a text about it from the 208.
Okay. Okay,
so, Brock, you're wearing your Oklahoma State hoodie.
I am.
You're going to be spending some time with the Cowboys and Cowgirls.
Yes, I am.
Buy or sell, we see Brock in denim and cowboy boots at some point.
Yeah.
Oh,
this season.
Yeah.
Great.
He's already been spending some time in Montana.
Yeah.
I know.
Mm-hmm.
I still wearing the 270s and the Lulus in the gym. I mean, he's not really looking the part. Is he going to look the part in Oklahoma State?
Yeah. Yes. Bye.
Bye.
Brock loves himself that. He would love a good belt buckle.
Did he buy
you a big belt buckle for your birthday a few years
ago? I got a belt buckle. Yeah. I got some ropers.
I remember that.
You got some ropers?
I got some ropers. I'll wear my ropers every once in a while.
Yeah. Uh-huh. He doesn't look right. Like, it looks like he's dressing for Halloween.
What?
But he will definitely wear them.
Cosplaying as a cowboy.
About?
Cowboy hat. I want to see the whole thing.
I think two times that I have felt like, yep, I look good. Two times on two occasions in my life. One of them was.
I don't believe that. I don't believe you've only looked at yourself twice and think.
Maura, only twice. Only twice. And they were both in costume.
Yeah.
Only twice. 70s party in college in the summer. I was like, I'm feeling this. I had a little wig. It was when I was in peak condition, had the shirt unbuttoned a little bit. Like, I feel nice. And then the other one was the Garth concert a few years back. The ropers, jeans, cowboy hat.
What about doing the push-ups on the diving board? Did you look good there?
No. No, we did not.
Well.
Depends upon.
I mean, I didn't have any wardrobe on, right? I mean, that was, I can't say I put some on. I had everything basically off.
Okay, sorry.
All right, there you go. That's a little buy-sell for today.
Sorry, Mara.
This is a wild Tuesday.
I was okay until you brought up the diving board.
I was excited for the Jonathan Class A one, that he will hoist the Trident while he's up with the team. Yeah, I think he will. I think he's got a little sneaky pop.
Trident bigger than him?
Might be, but I think he will hit. The better question is, who hits a home run first, Class A or Julio?
Oh, come on.
Little race. Class A, Julio, France, or Garver? Who hits their first home run?
Julio gives Brock a delayed birthday present tonight.
You think Julio gets one first?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I do.
I'm going to go with the outlier.
You're going Garver?
I'm going to take Class A.
Oh, Class A is the first home run of the four of them. We'll see.
I saw Ty put one out in batting practice, though, yesterday, so I thought that was a good sign. It was nice to know he still can put the ball over the fence. Hopefully, one of these days, it'll happen during a game.
I didn't have Luke Raley bunt single on my bingo
card. Was nice, and then banged a triple off the right field wall as well. He had a nice little game last night, and you may see a little bit more of him. Remember, the original plan was to have those guys rotating through, but then Canzone and Haniger ended up being the only two guys on the team who were hitting. So for poor Luke Raley didn't get a lot of chance to play out there. He keeps doing what he did last night. You'll see a little more Luke Raley.
How about a little Garver at catcher? How about him be the backup catcher?
You might have to. You might have to.
Yes.
Honestly, you might have to. And he's not great at it, but he's not hitting a DH. And what you're seeing at catcher right now when Cal's not in there is an atrocity. It just cannot continue. It's Brock and Salk. We'll come right back with everything you need to know next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it was nice to see the Mariners bats come to life, even if it was just for one night last night. Hopefully there's a little something there. They can learn from it, gain a little confidence, and go do your thing. It was Polanco with the home run early. Mitch Haniger added one late.
The 1-0. Swinging, it's clubbed high out to the gap in left center field. It's driven well. It's driven deep. And it's driven out of here. Mitch Haniger with a two-run home run. It's a 5-1 Mariners lead.
That was great to see the offense coming alive. George Kirby doing his thing on the mound. I'll tell you what else I like yesterday, Brock. I think I mention this every year. I love the Jackie Robinson Day thing.
Yep.
I love how everybody wears number 42. I love the story of how Ken Griffey Jr. started it here in Seattle, and it became a thing throughout the rest of the country. I think that's an amazing part of the story. I thought Dave Sims and Mike Blowers did an awesome job, but especially Dave and his stories and commentary on Jackie Robinson last night en route was awesome.
How about that picture they had of the old Husky Stadium when he was a football player at UCLA?
Seen that.
It's amazing. I had seen some of those old school pictures, didn't realize that he was a running back at UCLA and played in Husky Stadium as well. It was really cool. But it's a perfect example, like the Trident. When you got something good, don't mess around with it.
Stop.
You don't need to reinvent it every year. The thing is working. So just keep rolling with it. You know, you said something very astute at the start of the show when you and I were together. You said that is the first time in 17 games. And baseball is a funny game, and it's not going to be perfect. You know, and it's not going to be a great plan every time, but that's what it was supposed to look like. That's what it looked like in the second half of the spring. That is why Scott Servais said to you and I last week, he said, man, I really, of all my 8 years as a manager, really felt like coming out of spring, we would be able to see us orchestrate our plan. Felt better about this team than he had the seven others. But that was the first time in 17 that we really saw the kind of defense, the elite pitching we've seen a ton, but most importantly, the offense play complementary ball to that pitching last
100%.
Night.
So they'll get back to it tonight. Game two against the Reds, Logan Gilbert and Hunter Green. Good news on the Dominic Canzone front. Sounds like he's not going to need surgery on his shoulder, but he is going to miss a couple of weeks here as he tries to come back.
Here's the second thing you need to
know. You ever separate your shoulder?
I've never done that. It sounds really painful.
Freaking hurts.
I bet.
It feels
just
like
painful.
A knife. Every time you cough, it feels like a knife is just stuck right there. Right? It hurts.
Like right under the collarbone?
Yes. Ugh. It is just the ribs and the knee and the ankle and the concussion and the finger. Like that one, that one hurt. I think that one hurt the most.
Wow.
Oh, that was awful.
Yeah, that doesn't sound fun at all. Let's see. We got nice news here. John Ryan is going to sign a one-day contract to retire as a Seahawk. I like that. It's kind of a nice gesture for a guy that had some nice moments here, although there was that one where he just got planted. So hopefully we don't have to talk too much about that one. We'll relive it. And then Iowa State defensive back Cooper DeJean is coming in for
Iowa.
The top 30.
Iowa.
It's okay. Iowa?
Yeah,
I'm sorry. Did I say Iowa State?
You did. Big difference.
I meant Iowa.
Yeah, I know you did.
Yeah, he's a Hawkeye.
He's a Hawkeye, not a Cyclone. That's exactly right. He was in for a visit. They'll have a couple more guys just dribbling in here until Thursday. Yeah. Thursday, the final day that you can bring your guys in the building. You could still go out and visit them up until Tuesday. And Salk, we're like 9 days away.
I can tell you, Brock, I can report that George Halani, running back from Boise State, is going to be one of those. That's my own report right there.
Really?
That's breaking news from Mike Salk. George Halani is going to visit from Boise State.
Wow.
Nothing? He's not even listening?
No response.
G's sitting in there. He's not even responding. Unbelievable.
Yeah, our own G. Scott broke that news this morning.
No, that's my news. That's my news.
Hold on. I didn't think I was allowed to say anything until
you're not.
Friday's 8:30.
But I thought you'd at least look at me and give me a disapproving look since I stole your report right there.
Oh,
okay. Nothing?
No, I mean, I got nothing.
Okay.
Sometimes I just want to let the sports world, you know, I still got it.
Okay,
you know?
That's good to hear. Anyway, George Helani, a native of New Zealand, is going to come in and take a little visit here with the Seahawks. Pretty cool.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
This really should be the first thing you need to know, man. Last night, Caitlin Clark goes number one overall. No surprise here.
With the first pick in the 2024 WNBA draft, the Indiana Fever select Caitlin Clark, University of Iowa.
If you were a big Fever fan, do you think there was a moment, just like a split second moment when she pauses, where you're like, you're going to take her, right? They're not going to like do something crazy and take Cameron Brink or somebody else. Like, they're going to take her, right? They're not going to trade the pick. Like, don't you think there was just a moment of like.
That was me with Joe Burrow. I was like,
oh, thank God.
Don't not do this. Don't not do this.
Anyway, she goes number one overall to Indiana, where she'll now team with Aaliyah Boston. She'll be here to take on the Storm on May 22nd. And when she gets here, maybe she'll see Nika Mühl, who battled against her and did a heck of a job defensively when they met in the Final Four. Nika is the 14th pick taken here to Seattle. Excited to be on her way.
I feel like first and foremost, their roster, I mean, just looking at it, those are some iconic women. Those are some iconic basketball players. People that I want to learn from, that I want to listen to, that I want to get challenged by, that I want to get yelled at, everything, all of the above. And I'm ready for it. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of like a similar thing for me going to UConn and going to this place. Obviously, this is the next level. I feel the same. I feel that, like, that eager to learn. I feel the eager to be challenged and the eager to fail and rise up. And I feel like that coaching staff and that team will do it for me.
Brock.
Yes.
I am so excited about this story. I love it.
You're so in.
I am 100%. And this is, again, the first time in years I have found myself excited about something new and invigorated.
It's awesome. And Brennan Maxwell, by the way, local girl, Gig Harbor, tied back in the day, went to Utah, transferred over to Gonzaga to finish her career. Goes one pick ahead of Nika Mühl there at the top of the second round. Two Zags, in fact, get drafted last night. So kudos to them and their program. Great success this season and furthered it with some WNBA draft success last night.
That is everything you need to know. Did you deal with it or run into any of these gals when you're either with Haley or Macy at their time?
Yeah, that's what's fun is seeing a lot of these different players now through the years in these different programs that you saw them at the high school level, played against Brenna in high school down at Gig Harbor, East Lake High School. And yeah, we got the better of them that night down there in the harbor. Nice. But she's an unbelievable shooter. So it is fun to see many of these gals over the years from AAU tournaments, all some from afar, just like in that AAU circuit, some that you played high school against. And pretty neat to see their careers come to fruition. Can you do me a favor,
yes,
by the way?
Yes, I can.
I'm not going to ask Justin and Maura. We don't have that kind of equity, the kind of years that you and I have together. And this is obnoxious. And as I'm saying it, I know this is going to sound very obnoxious.
Okay.
But that little draft chime.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite sounds. Can you make that my ringtone? Like when I call you or text you, can you do that on your phone? Be like, oh, okay, Brock.
I mean, my phone's always on vibrate. Brock's, like there's, I never have the sound.
You never have the sound on?
No.
Oh, okay, so good. Then just do it. And therefore, you may never even hear it anyway.
Right.
But I just, I don't know. There's something about that sound that I just love. I'm like Pavlov with that sound. It's just, it just kind of
does. Just makes you think of the draft, obviously.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so I don't know. A little bit of an obnoxious ask.
I don't know that I can do that.
Kind of like Trent Dilfer when he said to Hasselbeck and Zorn.
I guess what I would say is since we are that close, I'm just going to say no.
Okay, that's fine.
Like, I can just flat out say no. If you'd asked me yesterday on your birthday, I probably could have refused you. But today, I'm just going to flat out say no.
Cry, grandma.
Thank you. All right, let's talk to Jeff Passan. You can ask Jeff about it. Maybe Jeff would be willing to go there for you. You guys have a nice relationship. He's coming up next. Brock with Salk Sales Sports on 710.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports App.
It's Tuesday. It's time for Jeff Passan. Good morning, Jeff. How are you?
Mississippi Queen. It's a great song.
A little mountain.
Really good song. Great Guitar Hero song, too.
Is that true? Leslie West is the guy's name, right? He's a huge dude. He was in Mountain, and they actually have a bunch of other good songs.
Are you a gamer, Passan? Yeah. Are you a gamer?
No, I don't have time for it, but I enjoy it when I get the rare downtime to if I have some downtime, I'll play WWE 2K24 with my kid. Like that's my idea of a good time these days.
How many cell phones child? Do you
is
rock?
Is this a kid or child?
Yeah. His child.
Are we really gonna like get pedantic about this?
Yeah.
No. We don't even know what that word means. But no.
One of you said yes. The other of you said no. Yeah. Make up your mind.
Yeah. We don't have to agree on everything. Yeah. Hey, let's bunch of stuff I want to get to today. I want to start with Jackie Robinson Day because I was just struck by it again last night, and I think I am every year. What an incredible thing it is in baseball. As you go around, you talk to folks, what else can they do? Because as I was down there yesterday, I was talking to some folks from Baseball Beyond Borders. It was like an RBI style program here in Seattle. And he's like, look, the number of black players in the game right now is lower than it was in the 1970s. Are any of these programs working at all?
I think they're working some, but they're not working to the level that they should or could. And I don't, you know, there are two different elements of this that that I think could be addressed. I'm not sure that they're going to solve this. Number one, baseball is just like not cool. I hate saying that as somebody who's, you know, career and in many ways livelihood is tied to the game, but you know, when compared to the relative popularity of the NFL and the NBA, baseball just doesn't stack up. It's seen as slow and boring, and I don't think it's just black kids who that affects. I think it's kids, period. There's also, though, socioeconomic element to the sport where it's not just black youth, it's impoverished or economically disadvantaged people of all races and backgrounds that just get priced out of the game. And in order to be a baseball player in 2024, you need bats that cost $500, gloves that cost $300 or $400. You need to join a summer team or travel team that costs thousands of dollars. Like it's just not an easy thing mm-hmm. to do for a lot of people. And so you wind up in this situation where I'm not going to say baseball, golf or tennis, but it's a lot closer to a country club sport than it used to be.
Can I just add another number on there? Because like you, Jeff, with your son playing baseball, I've got a 14-year-old, and this last weekend they played supposedly the top team in the state that plays in all these perfect game tournaments and everything else. Do you know what it costs? You mentioned the bat and the glove and all of that. Do you know what it costs to just play on this team in the state of Colorado? $10,000. That doesn't even include your travel. $10,000 just to be on the team.
$10,000
to be on the team to practice with them and have their coaches and their expertise and everything else. That doesn't count the cost of equipment. That doesn't count the cost of your travel, your hotels, everything else over the course of a spring and summer playing, out of state weekend after weekend after weekend. I mean, you are talking close to $40,000.
That's criminal.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yes. I mean, these tournaments that you've got to play in, and this is where all the showcases are. And then, oh, by the way, then you got to go to all these showcases and you got to show off all of your talents. Yeah, it is.
Well,
the socioeconomic side of it is.
I'll throw a little plug then for Baseball Beyond Borders, talking to the guys over there yesterday, because basically it's a $250 buy-in and then it's scholarship after that. And they'll figure out a way to get you playing in the right places with the right equipment and everything else. So if that is a barrier to you and you're listening right now to playing baseball, go find those guys at Baseball Beyond Borders, because just phenomenal cool. What they're doing. All right. Bunch of other stuff to get into today, Jeff, because it was nice to see the Mariners finally turn their offense on yesterday. And one of the things that we've kind of tried to figure out is how information, with all of the numbers and all of the info that now exists in baseball, how it gets filtered down to players. Are there teams that are starting to back away from that at all and saying they've overcomplicated it and they just want their guys to go out and swing?
No, not yet. In fact, I think, and this is less with hitting than it is with pitching, but I know the Mariners are a very process-oriented organization, and the communication that they have between or among, I guess, analytics, coaches, and players is pretty sound. And I think a big part of the bullpen effectiveness that they've had with guys who have struggled elsewhere comes from that communication and comes from, the passing down of information. But let's be very clear about something when it comes to information. There's not going to be less of that in baseball, not just because it makes sense to have the most information you possibly can, but because the players, Mike, who are coming up these days, they grew up in baseball's information era. They're not only used to it, they desire it. It's part of their game now. And organizations that don't have that information, it seems like to players that they are at a disadvantage on account of that. So no, I think it's only going to get stronger, the relationship between players and the information that they're given. What you need to do is make sure, if you're an organization, that your process for delivery as well as interpretation of that data is strong enough that players aren't looking at the wrong things.
Give me the most process data-driven organizations and give me a couple of the least process data-driven organizations.
I think you'd have to put the Rays at the top. They have sustained success for as long as they have, in large part, I think, because they are so good with data and so good at getting buy-in from their players. And that's the key, right? You got to get buy-in from players. The Minnesota Twins are high up there. The Milwaukee Brewers do a really good job at that. The Dodgers are good at everything, but the Dodgers are definitely part of that. Teams that are on the lesser side, the Rockies, the White Sox, the Nationals.
So the worst teams in baseball.
Generally, I was going to say, generally speaking, teams that aren't very good. the Angels.
It's so funny because you say that, Jeff, and we got people calling the show yesterday as we say, hey, what's wrong with the Mariners? And one of the most common things is, oh, it's Scott Servais. They're too into analytics. He's confusing everybody. There's no, it's
too matchup driven.
There's no more gun.
Tell me you don't know baseball without telling me you don't know baseball. I mean, come on. It's like, it's so easy to sit here and make numbers a boogeyman when things aren't going right. But when things are going right, as they have for the last couple of seasons, are numbers suddenly just like a small part of it? I mean, at very least, if you're going to be intellectually dishonest, be consistent in your intellectual dishonesty.
That's pretty much what I wanted to say yesterday, but I wasn't able to say all of that. So thank you, Jeff, for coming in and saying it from the outside. I like it.
Well, what I want to know.
My pleasure.
What I want to know is, when is this Julio story coming out? Are you just sitting until Julio gets hot?
He's waiting for Julio to hit his first home run.
Where is the story? We've been waiting on the story for a month.
The answer to that is actually yes.
Jeff, what is going on with Julio? He is not Julio right now.
No, he's not, but we've seen these stretches from him before, right?
Yep.
Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but he was not Julio at the beginning of last year either.
Nope.
It's April 7th, 16th, and he doesn't have a home run yet, though. Like, we haven't quite seen this. He's hitting below 200. He got picked off the other night when he went into the game. The defense has actually been really good.
Rough.
He's been thrown out once at the plate, running through a stop sign, and all of that without hitting a home run. He has one extra base hit. As we said, it's April 17th. It just doesn't look, the Mariners are set up to survive some different things, but I don't see how they could possibly survive Julio doing this for too long.
Well, last May 21st, Julio was hitting 204, on base 280, slugging 376, and they survived that.
Yep.
And that was another month on top of what he's doing right now. So, you know me, I don't panic about small sample sizes, and I'm not going to do that here. Is it something that is worth continuing to follow and monitor and have those little fears in the back of your mind about? Yes. Is it worth going and making any sort of like wholesale changes to what he's doing right now? No. You just trust the talent. That's what I always say. Just trust the talent and it will play and he will be fine. I'm sorry, but Julio Rodriguez did not overnight forget how to play baseball. He's just going through a rough patch right now. And, you know, as you see, like, guys of his generation, like Bobby Witt Jr. getting off to, you know, ridiculous starts, and Anthony Volpe looking like a star, and Juan Soto doing Juan Soto type things. You know, these young guys who he's supposed to be up there with looking like monsters, they're all going to go through stretches too. Maybe not a stretch quite like this, but they're going to go through stretches, and it's just going to look a little bit different because they'll have the numbers that have been built up over the course of a month or two or three or however long it takes for them to go through a bad stretch, such that, you know, the dip will be there, but it won't be nearly as pronounced as it is when you start a season this way. Yeah. That being said, I can guarantee you that going into next season, Julio Rodriguez's entire MO is going to be, I want to start hot and I'm going to do things to make it such that I do.
Well, I think that's some of the challenge because that's what this year's mantra was.
Yeah.
Right. And if anything, Jeffrey, he overtrained to the point where at the start of camp, they kind of had to shut him down a little bit because, you know, wrist was a little bit sore, that he had taken so many swings that was really the story of the first 2 years. The first one being a rookie one where he got kind of screwed by umps and strike zone was all over the place. And he just, you know, survived that and then flourished. And last year, as you mentioned, it was all the way into May where, you know, he continued to remain cold. So that was supposed to be. And that's why Jeff Passan was out to write an article with Ichiro and Julio and get this whole thing going. So can we please get him started so we can finally read this article, for crying out loud?
I have another story I'm working on right now that's my priority at the moment. So actually, if I'm going to be completely selfish here, this can last for like a couple more days, and then he can get going and all will be well with the world.
Are you writing about Ellie De La Cruz? Because, I mean, you know, we don't get a chance to see him on a day-to-day basis, obviously, but just seeing him in person last night, getting a chance to watch him play, he is one
wild,
physically,
isn't it?
I mean, it really is. He looks like a giraffe out there, and then you see all the athletic plays he makes. I thought Brock made a pretty astute point earlier comparing him to Usain Bolt. I mean, he kind of has that same build, the same look, the freakish speed.
Literally the same size, 6'5", 200 pounds.
It's crazy.
That is a great comp, Brock.
How does he exist as a shortstop?
Well, and not only that, Mike, to add on to your first question to him about Jackie Robinson Day and making baseball cool, what if there were, because there are, you know, 50 other guys out there, 6'5", 200, that can run like the wind. They are. I mean, they play basketball. They play other sports. But can you imagine if Major League Baseball had another 20, 30 of every team had an Ellie De La Cruz?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, like, doesn't it feel like that's an inevitability, though? Let's remember, O'Neill Cruz is 6'7" shortstop who's got some of the same physical tools that that Ellie does. Not a, you know, Ellie hits from both sides of the plate, so that's a little bit different there. But I look at it like this. You know, Kevin Durant walked so Giannis Antetokounmpo could run, so Victor Wembanyama could sprint. And in baseball, it feels like the same exact thing is bound to happen, that, you know, when a new standard of athleticism has been proven, and the Turing test of the sport has made it such that, you know, this being that we did not think was real actually is, it's inevitable that someone who's an upgraded version is going to come along at some point.
Kind of feels like the Mariners rotation a little bit, right? I mean, just one after the other, after the other, after the other. We talked about Kirby, a brilliant outing last night. We talked a lot about Logan Gilbert going into this season as well, Jeff Passan. I'm just kind of curious, your next level numbers, your eyes, your conversations with where, I guess, those three with Wu out, but those three in particular, as they continue to evolve, anybody in the league have three quite like that at this age, in this stage of the game?
Who's the third? Bryce Miller?
Yes.
Anybody with three young pitchers like that? No. I mean, once Paul Skenes comes up, I guess Mitch Keller's a little bit older, but Paul Skenes, Mitch Keller, Jared Jones, like the stuff is right there with the Mariners guys. That's three guys who can hit 100 with their fastball and have nasty off-speed stuff. Mm-hmm. So what the Mariners have right now, unless there are drastic changes in baseball, that listen, could be coming as a result of the elbow injuries that are happening this year. There could be different rules put into place to make it such that velocity is, in terms of importance, downgraded, and going deep into games and availability is prioritized. But as long as we're on the trajectory that we are right now, this is not just the Mariners' present. This is everyone's future. This is what guys are going to look for when this is what guys are going to train for, because they understand this is what organizations are going to look for unless something totally changes in the way that the sport is run.
Are you suggesting that's a possibility that they could in some way limit?
Absolutely. I'm not just suggesting it's a possibility, Mike. I'm suggesting it's a necessity.
That they need to limit the velocity, essentially?
I don't think they need to limit the velocity. I think they need to incentivize pitchers away from it.
Okay. So in arbitration, maybe putting a higher premium on innings pitched or something like that?
Yeah, unfortunately, it doesn't work that way, because arbitration is a comparison-based system, and you can't walk in and say that this is what we want it to be. Like, you can't cajole the system like that. I think you can do it in free agency. If guys who throw a lot of innings start getting paid more than guys who throw really hard. But the problem with that is that, generally speaking, guys who throw a lot of innings may not be as effective as guys who throw really hard. And that's the catch 22 of all of this, that velocity works, right? Like, velocity is everything in baseball right now, because it's the straightest line to effectiveness.
And it sure seems as if people are more afraid of an injury history when someone's thrown a lot of pitches than if they're throwing really hard. Maybe they're wrong. Maybe that's a miscalculation. But it sure seems as if we hear a lot more about, oh, he's thrown so many pitches, it's only a matter of time before he gets hurt.
Yeah, I think that's changing a little bit. I think that's shifting. But the reality is they think all of them are going to get hurt. And if you if you have someone who doesn't, he's the outlier. He's not somebody that you can sit there and say, try to replicate what this guy is doing. Even though there may be something to it, we just haven't been able to isolate what it is specifically that can keep someone healthy, or rather what kind of witch's brew there is to keep them healthy, because that's what it takes. It's a combination of things, and certainly luck is among them. And yeah, as much as I wish in life you could somehow capture luck, it's not one of those things that we figured out how to do yet.
Let me see if I can do a little rapid fire with you just to quickly go around the AL West, because it looks a little topsy-turvy, albeit just a couple of weeks into this season. The Rangers are in first place, but have not played particularly well. What's going on with the Rangers?
Their pitching's not very good. You know, they're hitting. Like, they're near the top of the American League in runs scored at this point, and I think they feel good about that, but even a guy like Cody Bradford, who is a back end rotation type, had been arguably their best starting pitcher to this point, just hit the injured list. And so they just called up Jack Leiter, who was the number two pick in the 2021 draft, son of Al Leiter, you know, standout at Vanderbilt, like a guy who is supposed to be a stud and had struggled in the minor leagues. But this year, 14 and a third innings, 25 strikeouts, three walks, pretty good.
Okay.
And the stuff really plays. And the thing about the Rangers guys is they've understood that their first half might be a little bit iffy because they have Max Scherzer on the shelf, because Tyler Molly's on the shelf, because Jacob DeGrom's on the shelf. If they can get like one and a half of those guys back, you know, one who's coming back and pitching the way that you anticipate he would, and another who comes back and is good, like good enough, they're going to be perfectly fine, because they're going to be aggressive at the deadline too. They always are. And if there's a starting pitcher out there to be had, it wouldn't shock me to see the Rangers go out and get him.
How about, I mean, again, we got about a minute, but the other teams in the division, is Oakland any better than maybe they were supposed to be? Certainly their closer's pretty nasty. They look like they might be okay.
Yeah. Oakland's fine. They're going to lose 90-something games. The Angels are playing much better than I anticipated. I do not think they're very good. And the Astros, I'm not going to say that this is the year, but man, there are a lot of bad signs there. Did you see last night's game? Like, Josh Hader just absolutely imploded, and we are 3 weeks into a 5-year, $95 million contract.
I heard you on Saturday or Sunday on the national network. You were asked which team that started off slowly was going to turn it around. Mm-hmm. And I paused and I said, I wonder if Jeffrey's going to mention the Mariners here. Mm-hmm. And you didn't. You went with the Astros. So I was kind of disappointed driving in my car. I thought maybe we were going to get a little Mariner reference on national radio, but I should have known better. I should have known that wasn't going to happen.
Just our show.
Yeah, that's me. Big Seattle Mariners hater. Go ahead. Perpetuate the narrative. I'm going to perpetuate a narrative here.
What's that?
You're going to get smoked by Mora because you're a stumpy little chump.
Yeah.
And she's going to run right by you, and I'm going to laugh so hard.
Well, we'll see.
I'm going to laugh.
Let's go, Jeff.
Laugh.
You understand it's only a 200-meter race. Like, it's not a very long race.
It's longer than you think.
I was going to say, like, you think you can do a half a lap without being winded?
I didn't say that. I didn't say I wouldn't be winded. Well, I just said I was going to win the race.
I don't think Mora's going to be winded. I think she's
That's quite true. It's because she's not going to be running that fast. It's hard to get winded unless you're running fast.
I will fill in the hole in your chest.
All right. Goodbye, Jeffrey. We'll talk to you next week.
Hey, boys.
There you go. There's Jeff Passan, who joins us every
stumpy little chump.
8:30.
What a stubby little chump.
Why do we let him on the air? We pay him for this. Why in the world do we keep letting him on every week to take shots at me like this? This is ridiculous. Brock's got a draft profile, and it's a good one. Coming up next, Brock and Salk, Sales Sports on 710salesports.com.